To start into a discussion of Buddhism, and it's probably a good time to create some references up here. So let's start by just creating a timeline, starting with creation, and then we're going to mark some important dates up here. So obviously Jesus born 1 AD or so. When was the earth created? About what year? If we were going to give it a year.
Zero.
Zero, yeah. BC, what's the BC year?
4,000.
About 4,000, correct. How did we arrive at that number, by the way?
By counting backwards.
Yeah, we have the chronology of everyone that was born from Adam all the way to Jesus. And we know how long they lived, and we know the age that they were when their firstborn son or their daughter was born, and that gives us the ultimate time. So the religion we've been talking about for the last couple weeks is Hinduism. Does anyone remember the dates that we associate with Hinduism? I gave you several dates, so I'm not going to be too hurt if you don't remember the numbers. Supposedly, the religious ideas that ultimately became Hinduism started around 2000 BC. But the actual writings of Hinduism weren't placed into a text until about 1000 BC. Yeah, exactly.
So it would have started after.
Yeah, it must have started after the flood. Exactly. So here's some dates that maybe we'll be more familiar with. When was Abraham? When was the time of Abraham? A rough year.
19.
Yep. 18. 18 is the number that I use, but 19 is pretty close too. So Abraham, I'm just going to put 1800 because that's the number I have in my head. Is Abraham. What about Moses? 20?
No, the other direction.
12. 14. Remember how it talks about the law was 1,400 years, or 400 years after the promise? So about 1,400 BC. So the times of the first kings, so Saul, David, Solomon, what's a rough year we can put on that? I saw 1,000, yep. So this is also the time of David. All right, the reason I wanted to give you those dates is because Buddhism falls about 500 B.C., We spent a really long time talking about Hinduism, and I'm sorry that the conversation was so lengthy. Buddhism, I think, will be a lot more simple because Buddhism actually has a lot less substance than Hinduism does. So just tell me what you know about Buddhism. And if you don't know very much, that's okay. I didn't know very much until I started to study. What do you know about Buddhism? Here's a good question. Who is the founder of Buddhism? Buddha. Okay, so we all know that. That's a good start. That was better than our start on Hinduism. What else do you know about Buddhism?
Meditation.
Yeah, meditation is a big part. And we're going to talk about that more because the way we understand Buddhism is way different than the way the rest of the world understands Buddhism. Western Buddhism, have you ever heard this? Buddhism is not a religion, it's a philosophy. Have you ever heard that before? Right. Well, that is strictly a Western idea. Eastern Buddhism is not like that at all. Eastern Buddhism, which is real Buddhism based on the Buddhist holy text, is very much a religion. There's Buddhist monks. Surely you've at least seen Buddhist monks, in a number of different ways. You've heard of the Dalai Lama. Does anybody know who the Dalai Lama is? I didn't learn that until last night. Somebody tell me who the Dalai Lama is.
Yeah,
yeah, he's kind of the spiritual leader and in some ways the de facto civil leader of Tibet. And we won't talk about it in this class, but sometime do some research on how the Dalai Lama is appointed. It's unbelievable. Well, I'll just tell you because it's really interesting. So the Dalai Lama is... the Tibetan Buddhism is one major sect of Buddhism. There's basically four major sects of Buddhism. There's like Western Buddhism, and then in Eastern Buddhism, there's three major sects. All of them have their own canon of Buddhism scripture, and Tibetan Buddhism is one of those sects. The Dalai Lama is the chief leader of that form of Buddhism, and the Dalai Lama is the 14th Dalai Lama, and they call him the 14th because they believe this is his 14th reincarnation. And so when a Dalai Lama dies, and the last time one died was like back in 1934, when the Dalai Lama dies, there's all of these other like high lamas is what they're called. It's not a joke. They're called high lamas. And these high lamas, it becomes their job to find the reincarnated Dalai Lama. And so they start looking for these symbols. Like one of the symbols that they found to identify this Dalai Lama is apparently the last Dalai Lama, when he died back in 1934, they mummified his head. And one night, his head, when it was laying there, was facing southeast. And in the morning, it was facing the northwest, apparently looking towards the new Dalai Lama. So they knew the new Dalai Lama was northwest of this mummified head, okay? And there's all these other weird things they do to find the reincarnated Dalai Lama. And they literally are looking for a child that's born. So the current Dalai Lama, they found him when he was 2 years old. He was officially appointed the Dalai Lama at 15. And this kid has told his entire life that he's like this holy child that's going to be the leader of Tibetan Buddhism. It's really interesting. I don't even know what we were talking about. So let me write the Buddha's real name up here on the board just for the sake of writing it, I guess. His name was Siddhartha Gautama. His name was Siddhartha Gautama, and he was, as the story goes, and I think this is probably correct information, by the way. Some of this is sort of a little fantastic, but this, I think, is probably correct. So this guy, Siddhartha Gautama, he was born in the 5th century B.C. Some people have said that maybe he was born in the 4th century B.C. He was born in India, and he was born a Hindu. You remember, Hinduism was and is the predominant religion in India. He was born in India, and so he grew up a Hindu. And he was also born a prince. And as the story goes, and again, I think this much of it is probably true, he was born a prince. He eventually was going to inherit some type of kingdom. But when he looked around in the world, all he saw was suffering. Of course, that wasn't exactly true for him, because as a prince, and this information was conveyed by the Buddha himself, he was born very wealthy. He was born in a situation where he was going to acquire a lot of power. According to the story, he had a beautiful wife. He had a healthy son. But all he saw in the world was suffering. So he left. The way the story goes is he left all of that looking for answers. Apparently, he didn't know what he was looking for. He was just looking for answers. He was disillusioned by the Hindu religion. Some sources say that Buddha rejected the caste system, which, you know, that makes sense. The caste system was a way of socializing the Hindu people. And so when he looked at the world, he saw that everybody suffers. Eventually, everybody dies. He saw that material pleasure was fleeting, only gave temporary happiness. A lot of things that we would agree with, a lot of things that are definitely biblical ideas. So he gave all of that up and lived to abstain from all of those things. He apparently, as the story goes, Buddha studied with a number of different teachers looking for some type of enlightenment. He never found it, never found it. And so eventually he just goes and sits under this tree and starts meditating. And he meditates all night long and said, he tells himself, I'm going to sit here until I'm enlightened. And something happened, and in the morning he was enlightened. And exactly what that means is sort of strange. But let me write one more thing on the board here. He eventually started calling himself the Buddha, and people called him the Buddha. Buddha means the... Well, I won't write it. It's not that big of a deal. The Buddha just means the awakened one. And what Buddha was teaching is that he had an awakening or realization about his own nature. And this is very, very different from what we believe, so it's hard for me to even understand exactly what this is supposed to mean. But here's what the Buddha said. He said he had a realization about his own true nature, and he apparently, through this enlightenment, came to understand, I'll put that in quotes, that the only obstacle to peace in his life was his own human thinking. He also believed that his idea that he had a soul and a self was just an illusion. It was just an illusion. The human idea of a soul and a self, he believed, was an illusion. And in order to escape the suffering from the world, you just have to understand that. You have to understand that you don't really have a soul, you're not really a self, and when you understand that, you escape suffering in the world. Buddha, apparently, at least in the beginning, and even in his own lifetime, he never taught that he was a god. He taught that he was just a normal human being. And this is well corroborated, that he understood himself to be just like any other person, but he had reached a state of enlightenment. But even though that was the case, even though Buddha taught that he wasn't divine, that he wasn't a god in any way, he was in no form a supernatural creature, obviously, as soon as he died, legends started to be created about how he was a divine being. And here's one of the stories, and this is incredible. This is not a joke. This is one of the stories about Buddha. You know, Christ had a miraculous birth. Well, Buddha also had a miraculous birth, according to the legend. The way the legend goes is that his mother was impregnated while she was having a dream about a white elephant. That's the first part. This is a real story. That she was impregnated with Buddha while she was having a dream about a white elephant. And in the morning, she stood up to give birth and gave birth through her armpits. And that's a real story that comes from Buddhism. And I don't really understand the purpose of stories like that in Buddhism. There's a lot of stories like that. And I guess that it's somewhat like Hinduism, where, you know, we talked about in Hinduism where the meaning doesn't really matter. It's just, you know, the way it makes you feel and the words coming out of your mouth, it's sacred. And I don't know, maybe a story like this is supposed to be the same way, where the fact that it's a little ludicrous doesn't matter. It's just, you know, the sense of the story that's supposed to be sacred in some way. Any questions about the origin of Buddhism, or the Buddha, I should say, the founder of Buddhism?
The deal where it said he was born out of his mother's side.
Yeah, yeah. So I armpit side, I guess, yeah. All the same. So what you read, did it present that story as though it was like really meant to be believed?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
See, what I was reading was a non-Buddha resource, and they were just trying to present the facts. And you know, some of this information, I don't know if I'm supposed to take it seriously or not, and that was an example of it. Other questions or comment about Buddha?
Yeah, the Buddha shrines that people go to, are they always look the same? Do they always look like the guy sitting there?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure about that part. I would guess so, though. I mean, people give offerings to Buddha. And that is another thing. I can't remember if I left this in my notes or not, but that is one thing they do in Buddhism. I mean, it's idolatry. It's just like Hinduism and any other type of idolatry that's talked about in the Bible. They have physical idols, and they believe that they can venerate their gods by worshiping and giving gifts to the physical structures. They believe that they communicate with the gods through the physical presence of that, you know, piece of wood or piece of metal or whatever it is.
There's people, I don't remember what country it is now, but they're I don't know if they're in India, but there's some type of an Indian person that they're miners,
mm-hmm.
and they go down in the mines, and they have little shrines where they make offerings to the Satan god.
Oh, that's interesting.
God, Satan, because he's god of the underworld, and they give offerings to keep them safe.
Is this a branch, a part of Buddhism?
No,
okay.
I don't think so.
But it's an Indian, East Asian religion?
Or it may be in South America.
Okay.
But it's some type of an Indian religion.
That's interesting.
Dwayne? You mentioned that Buddha was never called a god.
Yeah.
And I think that's right, because Christianity, we're a God-centered religion. Buddhism is not a God-centered.
Right. That's a really good point.
Because they don't talk about God, but basically they believe that that God is not something to be believed in or worshipped, but to be experienced.
Right.
So it's all this mind, things of the mind.
Yeah, and they believe it's a human experience. They believe that God exists in heaven as much as he exists, you know, in a tree, as much as he exists in you. And he is definitely a very abstract idea. The divine nature, they would say, is, you know, we're all equally divine. The physical universe in every way is divine in that sense.
So they don't believe in a heaven or a hell?
No.
Just reincarnation?
Correct, yeah. Which
will always be here?
Correct. See, Buddha, like I said, was Hindu. And so many of the teachings of Buddhism, like the more abstract ideas like that, reincarnation, all of those ideas are borrowed from Hinduism. Basically, Buddha took Hinduism and adapted it to actually be much more moral. Buddhists generally are extremely moral people. A true Buddhist, there's many, many instructions about living a moral lifestyle, a lot of things that we would agree with. All of the things that Hinduism condones, Buddhism condemns. But yeah, essentially they believe in a universe that's constantly going through cycles of birth and rebirth. People go through cycles of birth and rebirth. So let's... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, isn't it the higher wisdom, too? They're into higher wisdom is the reason they set up monasteries to get this higher wisdom.
Sure, sure. And I'll just go ahead and mention this so you sort of know the end of the story. You know, with Hinduism, the objective is to ultimately be so good that you build up enough rapport that you're born into the highest caste. That's the way Hinduism works. You want to be reborn in the highest caste. That's as good as it gets. With Buddhism, though, and this is unbelievable. So with Buddhism, Buddha taught that when you finally reach a point of enlightenment, you can escape suffering by not being reborn. Yeah, it's called nirvana. Right, exactly. It's called nirvana. And nirvana truly means you cease to exist. Which, that doesn't sound like a very great reward. That makes me think I'd want to keep on being just a little bit bad so I could, you know, keep being reborn. But yeah, so that's what Buddha taught, is that you continue to be good, be good, be good. You lose all of that negative karma, and eventually you don't have to be born again and exist in this evil world. Which, I don't know, I guess I sort of get what he's saying, that the world is inherently evil, and who wouldn't want to escape the world? But God promises eternity in a world that's perfect. Buddha promises that you don't exist anymore.
Where do you go?
You don't go. You just aren't reborn anymore. Yeah, you just cease to exist. You don't go anywhere. Exactly. Which doesn't make me want to be...
Doesn't give you much incentive.
No, not at all. We're going to talk about some other things that aren't much incentive to be a Buddhist. Okay, so let's talk about some of the major beliefs of Buddhism. There's a whole lot of information here. It's sort of like Hinduism, where there's tons and tons of information. A lot of it really isn't worth our consideration, because ultimately what we want to know is Buddhism something that we should invest our time and study into? And I think we've already established at this point that it's probably not. Buddhism is inherently an atheistic religion. They don't believe in eternal God. They believe in gods, but the gods that exist in Buddhism are just manifestations of this, you know, that eternal force, kind of like Hinduism has. But Buddha said that even the gods eventually die and go away. So there's no eternal God in Buddhism, which I think immediately makes the religion suspect. How can you believe in the existence of a universe that doesn't have an originator? That's a big problem with Buddhism. Anyway, let's talk about some of the major beliefs of Buddhism. One of the things that Buddha taught was what are called today the Four Noble Truths. And like I said, a lot of things that Buddhism teaches, at least in the moral sense, are very much in line with what we believe. So So here's the four noble truths of Buddhism. Human life is full of suffering. We agree with that. Number two, suffering stems from cravings for pleasure and avoidance of pain. Well, I think on some level we would agree with that. Number three of these four noble truths, suffering can be eradicated. Number four, the path of freedom from suffering is the path of enlightenment. So that doesn't really give us the main objective of Buddhism. It basically says that this life is full of suffering and that as a human being you can escape that suffering. Buddhism also has some significant ethical and moral guidelines. For example, Buddhism says not to take a human life, not to lie, not to steal, not to use intoxicants, not to engage in illicit sexual behavior. And then there's a list that goes on, a lot of things that we would basically agree with as Christians. So let's talk about the essential theology of Buddhism, a few things we've already mentioned. Buddha said that there is no God and that men do not have eternal souls. So ultimately, we're not eternal. There's no God. And like Mike mentioned, the ultimate goal of Buddhism is to end suffering and get to nirvana. And like we've already mentioned, nirvana is not a place like heaven. It's just a state where you no longer are living. It's just you're gone. And Buddha taught that the only way to get to nirvana, or non-life is what he calls it, is just to live enough good lives. So you're reincarnated, you keep living good, and eventually you just cease to live. And that's your reward for being good, is that you don't exist any longer. Well, see, Buddha, apparently, when he was teaching, Buddhist scripture has evolved over time to sort of address those questions, but Buddha originally did not address that question. That's my understanding anyway. He just taught that you keep living good and eventually you cease to exist, and did not address any ideas like heaven or a consciousness afterwards. And I think part of the reason is because Buddhism teaches that you don't really have a soul, that the sense of self is just an illusion, and that once you escape that illusion is when you escape this world and you cease to exist. So I think it's part of the reason that you don't think after you reach nirvana, because, you know, if you don't have self, then you can't think. I don't get it, but go ahead, Mike, and then Matt.
I was just going to say, so then how does Hinduism and Buddhism account for the increase in population? If you die and you're reincarnated, where does all the new people come from?
I don't know. I've wondered about... Oh, that's a good point. Animals. Well, they do believe that humans in previous lives could be animals. Well, here's another thing, too, that
there's got to be a decrease in animals.
Well, here's another thing, though. I think they have an answer to that. One of the resources I read said that you can be reincarnated as like a spirit or a ghost. So maybe that's where the increasing population comes from creatures that we can't see. Anyway, I don't know, but maybe that's one of the ways they would explain it. So that was one thing I really wanted to emphasize, was the idea of nirvana. That Buddhism's promise to you is that if you live a really good life, you cease to exist. Buddha, although he did not teach that he was God or any type of divine being, Buddha definitely taught that he was a very, very important person. He taught that he was the enlightened one. He compares himself like a father to the world. He said that he came to the earth. Where he came from, I don't know. But he says that he came to the earth to rescue all living beings from the fires of birth, rescue us from sickness, old age, death, stupidity, misunderstanding, suffering, greed, anger, and delusions. Because people are ignorant, that's the big problem in Buddhism and in Hinduism as well. Both of them are teaching that we should be moving towards a state of enlightenment. And they believe that the main obstacle to that is our own ignorance. And so Buddha said that he was helping people to escape their own ignorance. In Buddhism, this is interesting too. In Buddhism, unlike Hinduism, which has a number of different creation stories, Buddhism offers no creation story at all, partly because it's irrelevant to the religion, and also because Buddhism teaches that just like people are born and reborn and die and then reborn, they believe that the universe exists in the same way, that it's eternal, that it has no beginning in the sense that the Christian universe does, that time and the nature of the universe just is born and then dies and then is reborn, and the universe dies and then is reborn, and that has gone on since eternity and continues into eternity. Originally, Buddhism, like I said already, didn't address the idea of heaven or hell, because in Buddhism, that's ultimately irrelevant. The goal is nirvana. But as Buddhism has evolved, new Buddhist ideas have been created, and with those ideas is some explanation on the concept of heavenly realms, at least, into which people can be reborn. So you, in Buddhism, for some Buddhists anyway, they believe that you could be reborn into a heaven-like place, or you could be reborn into a place like hell, but still, ultimately, they believe the end of the human existence is nirvana, which is no existence at all. So I've been talking for a little bit. Any questions or comments to this point? Matt?
If they don't believe in a God, but there's a reward of nirvana, a reward has to come from some being.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the way I think, too, but they don't think like that. I know. That's my way of saying their thinking doesn't make any sense. Because they believe that, you know, we believe the divine nature is something that's put inside of us, but God is ultimately the source of divinity, of spirituality in the world. Well, they don't think like that. They don't believe that there's a source of the divine nature. They think that all is divine on some level. Sometimes it's called the pantheon. And basically what that means is all is God and God is all, is kind of what the idea of pantheon means. That's my understanding at this point anyway. And so you and I are as much God as anything else could be God. And so how that happens, you know, how they're reborn, why, you know, the forces that move that, I think they would just say, well, that's part of our nature. That's just the way the world exists. No explanation for it at all.
Where's that Buddhism? What kind of people, where's it located at in the world?
Eastern Asia, India, China, Tibet, Japan, Mongolia, all pretty much India and eastward.
It's interesting that they don't worship a god.
Right.
You sure see them bowing all the time. They're down on their knees in reverence. You know, and that seems to be too, they said, to in a gesture of reverence to the triple gem.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I don't understand about that. Maybe you.
Well, I saw some of those things when I was studying, but one of the issues with Buddhism is that each sect of Buddhism has very, very different beliefs. I don't know if they would say that they're incompatible, but they present very different ideas. And so I did read about that, but I didn't know if that just represented the ideas of one sect of Buddhism or if that was a big idea in Buddhism. But yeah, you're right. They definitely are engaged in a lot of practices, sort of like Hinduism. You remember Hinduism, we said, really wasn't about orthodoxy. It was about orthopraxy. It was about not doctrine, but your practices. And Buddhism, in some ways, is the same way. Which, in Western Buddhism, so the Buddhism that's practiced here in the United States, essentially, and in Western Europe, here, Buddhism, you know, is really focused on meditation, which is in some ways related to real Buddhism in Eastern Asia. But in Eastern Asia, it's definitely connected to their practices as well, much like Hinduism, where there's something holy about the different practices and the sayings that come from their holy scripture. We've already talked about how in Buddhism there's no gods. Yeah.
Cultures. What's the presence or the what kind of a percentage? Have you found anything about how many are in the United States or the world comparatively, both Hinduism and Buddhism?
I'm not sure. My guess is, though, just from the things that I've read, Buddhism definitely has an appreciable presence in the Western world, you know, in the United States and Western Europe. Not really true for Hinduism. So, I mean, my understanding is, without looking at any numbers, is that Buddhism definitely has some presence. I've met a few Buddhists, which is not true of Hinduism.
At one time, Buddhism was one of the largest religions in the world.
Right.
But it's gone down, but now they're saying it's one of the fastest growing religions in the world.
And I think that's largely Western Buddhism.
Yeah, they're talking about
And I think well, there, a lot of atheists sort of get into the Buddhism idea. And why do you think that is?
No.
Yeah, there's no God. There's no responsibility. And in Western Buddhism, there's not really any consequences to what you do. Western Buddhism, I don't think, like, for example, in one of the classes that I taught a couple years ago, I had a young man in there who was Buddhist. And I got the impression that for him, and this is what I asked him. I said, is Buddhism a religion or is it not? Is it a spiritual experience or not? And he said, for some people, it is a religion and a spiritual experience, but for a lot of people, it's neither. It's not a religion. It's not a spiritual experience. And for him, and this is what he told me, he said, I had a lot of stress in my life. I heard Buddhism could help. And so he became a Buddhist. He's definitely an atheist. For him, it's not a spiritual experience at all. It's very, what's that?
It's meditation.
Yeah, it's just strictly meditation. It's strictly meditation, exactly. I don't know if I should say strictly meditation. That's the focus, is meditation that ultimately results in some type of inner peace that he can be comfortable with. So one of the questions that I think is worth asking is, what is the purpose of life in Buddhism? And before we answer that, let's answer for Christians. What's the purpose of the life of a Christian?
Give God pleasure.
Yeah, serve Christ, to give God the glory. And then there's sort of some appendages to that purpose, understanding that we have a reward to follow, avoid the consequences of not giving God glory in our lives. With Buddhism, it's a lot more abstract than that. For example, the resource I read, and this was from a Buddhist, said that there's no single answer to that. Part of it is because every Buddhist, at least in some ways, has the liberty to approach that religion in their own way. Again, very different from Christianity. Buddhism would say, if you're asking them for a purpose of the Buddhist life, a Buddhist would say that life is suffering. That's one of the Four Noble Truths. Life is suffering, and so the goal of the Buddhist life is to escape suffering and escape life. So that's nirvana. So they would say, my goal in life is to escape life. For other Buddhists, they might say that the purpose of their life is to accumulate enough merits and to shed enough of that negative karma that they can someday be born into a better life, or maybe even be born as a Buddha in some other world or some other universe. In Buddhism, there's the idea of the Eightfold Path. I didn't even bother researching what that was. But a Buddhist might say that my goal is to follow the Eightfold Path. It's just, a sacred life in Buddhism. And then in, like, Japanese and Chinese Buddhism, Zen originates from that area. Zen, I guess, is a form of Buddhism. And they would say that, as a Buddhist, their purpose in life is just to live. Life is sacred. In life is the divine nature. And they would say, my purpose in life is just to live, because in living, I'm partaking of the nature of the Buddha. And so for them to realize that there's purpose in living, for them that is satisfying their purpose. So let's talk about just a few more details about some of the basic tenets of Buddhist beliefs. In real Buddhism, there are Buddhists, there's a Buddhist clergy, essentially. Those are the Buddhist monks. There's a Buddhist clergy, essentially, and then there's a Buddhist laity. And this is all written into the Buddhist holy text, as I understand it. And, of course, many of these ideas didn't exist while Buddha was teaching. My understanding is that Buddha himself did not teach the idea of a clergy and a laity in Buddhism, but immediately after his death, you know, same thing that happened with the church. As soon as all the apostles died, you get this hierarchy formed. Exact same thing happened in Buddhism. As soon as Buddha died, Buddha died, a clergy was formed. There was a distinction created between them and the laity. And there's even a council formed of the leaders of these groups. Some of the prominent disciples, they all got together and they agreed to standardize the doctrines of Buddhism. I want to tell you something about the monks in Buddhism. Like I've told you already, Buddhism is actually, it seems, from what I've read so far, is a very, very moral religion, especially for the monks. Let me just read you a few things of what I read. A monk could be banished from his temple group. He could be banished for engaging in any type of sexual relations. He could be banished for stealing, killing someone, for claiming to have supernatural powers, which I thought was interesting. There's also lesser offenses that could just lead to a period of probation as opposed to being banished from the community. Monks take vows not to drink alcohol, not to eat after noon. They're not allowed to indulge in public entertainment, not to use ointments, perfumes. They're not supposed to sit on comfortable seats or beds. They're not supposed to handle money. So this is very much an ascetic life where they're deliberately abstaining from many of the pleasures that normal people would engage in. In Buddhism, for the monks at least, and maybe for all Buddhists, I'm not sure, there's rules against flirting, against touching people of the opposite gender. There's 30 specific rules about possessions, how you're supposed to acquire them, how you're supposed to use them. Apparently there's 92 rules that deal with offenses such as gossip or hoarding food. So there's a number of rules. None of them, as far as I can tell, are inherently wrong. Some of them, I would say, are inherently illogical. But none of them are wrong in and of themselves. Quite different from Hinduism, where you've got Hindu scripture teaching a lot of things that are very, very evil. Another note that I found says that even the lay Buddhists have a number of very strict rules for their behavior. They're not supposed to kill, steal, lie, engage in sexual misconduct. They're not supposed to take any type of intoxicants. And some other things, too, that would also be very much in line with Christianity. They're encouraged to be good workers, to take care of their possessions, not to overspend, not to accumulate debts. All of those things come from Buddhism. It's time for us to stop this morning. Does anyone have any comments or questions remaining?
Well, look, the one thing that occurred to me when you just said they don't sit on comfortable seats or beds or whatever. So it sounds like they purposely tried to suffer. But if they purposely try to suffer, how does that work with the idea of trying to get rid of all suffering and get to nirvana?
Well, I think it comes down to self-denial. All of their emotions and feelings, their sense of self and soul, all of that is an illusion, they would say. And so I think they would say that denying themselves those pleasures helps them to escape their identification with self. And the more they can do that, the further they get away from their own emotions and feelings, the closer they can get to nirvana.
Isn't that one of the reasons why they've been known, as well as other people, to be able to create such a mental state that they can suffer things, painful things,
sure,
that would put us in the hospital?
Sure, yeah.
It doesn't seem to affect them at all.
Sure, and that's because they, like we just said,
piercing things through their body.
You
know, they all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, they do some incredible things, and it's all part of this process of trying to separate whatever they are, whatever they think.
Your mind from your body.
Yeah, and ultimately just escape even your mind. I mean, that's the goal of Buddhism, is to escape identification with yourself and your soul, because that doesn't really exist. Thanks for your time this morning. Next week we'll talk about the Buddha's holy texts and some apologetics in Buddhism. That may or may not take the whole class. We'll take about a 10-minute break.